I'm Brandi Cruz, coming up today on Undivided, a 14-year-old girl who spoke from the heart about what it was like to compete against a biological boy is no surprise being bullied by ideologues online. Plus, the Washington State Board of Education has released its list of 2025 legislative priorities, and shock of the century, it's all focused on equity. And Bob Ferguson says he opposes dark money unless he benefits from it. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Jazz in there? I don't know. Sure. Did you know that that song was created for our show? Not even just a stock song. That song was created for our show by a friend of mine. And so, you know what? It'll be here to stay. I just love it. It soothes me. We've got a hell of a busy show for you today. The very first thing I'm going to do is tell you to get your walking shoes on and join us on Friday in Marysville and on Saturday in Bothell. We're going to give it one last hell of a shot to get Dave Reichert across the finish line, and perhaps more importantly, make sure Bob Ferguson never steps foot in the governor's office. So we are going to have a mass volunteer event. We're going to get our Common Sense Army out there in Marysville, 3 p.m. to 6 p.m., and then join us afterwards for a rally being hosted by the Fortneys, and then in Bothell from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So it's pick your pleasure. If you want to knock on doors, you feel confident, because we're going to talk about Dave Reichert's positions, but also make sure people know to vote yes, pay less on the initiatives. You can do that if you feel like sign waving is more your jam. That's Nicole's jam. Nicole is in charge of team sign waving. I love it. I've been getting texts from people who've never participated in a political event, like a friend of mine in my yoga class, and they're going to be there and they're like, I'm going to go. I want to help Dave. And so please come. It'll be a ton of fun, ton of enthusiasm, and we're going to go out there and do everything we can to save the state of Washington. All right. So yesterday on the show, we played a clip for you of a 14-year-old girl named Annalie. And I met Annalie at an event in Wenatchee, and it was a Riley Gaines event, but Annalie introduced Riley Gaines, which was very fitting because Annalie is the girl who got second place to a boy at the Junior Olympics track meet in Kashmir. And so she, you know, got up, gave this heartfelt, these heartfelt remarks about what it was that she went through and what it was that she felt. In fact, we have a clip. Can you play this clip, Nicole? I'm going to jump ahead to it quick.
No matter where you stand, failing to protect women's sports is wrong. So much hate and conflict has come from both sides. The things I have heard about this transgender athlete and me are awful and damaging. I am only 14, and I shouldn't have to deal with these kinds of adult issues. But here I am. But here I am, speaking up, hoping that adults will step up and do what is right to protect and keep women's sports fair and safe for biological girls.
Yeah. So we pushed that out, and it has been viewed almost a million times overnight. Riley Gaines retweeted it. There were some other major social media accounts that retweeted it, and we put out the whole 7-minute clip. And rightfully so, because as I said, I think it's a 99% issue if you actually sit people down, make them watch her whole 7 minutes, pouring her heart out. I mean, total common sense. And then you ask people, hey, do you support biological boys competing against girls? I really believe it's a 99% issue. So that's out there on the internet. And as the internet does, people act like absolute asshats, even when it's a 14-year-old girl. So Riley Gaines pushed out some of the comments. And I give Riley Gaines all the credit in the world for this. So she put out some of the comments that had been left. As Riley Gaines put it, this is just a little glimpse of the comments grown adults are leaving for a 14-year-old girl to read. So much for the so-called party of tolerance. Annalie is my hero. I'm going to read a couple of these. Oh, gosh, Riley's nicer than I am. I wouldn't have blocked out those names at all. I would have absolutely straight up put these people on blast. She literally finished second. Another girl was faster. It's effing pathetic. We're at the point in society when people can't accept when they fail. Next time she should run faster if she wants to win. Plain and simple. Yet, no, she didn't take second place to a girl. She took second place to a boy. This is a comment on a family member's post. Your niece is transphobic and you should not be proud of that. Shows how effed up you and your family are. Pathetic. She lost to a woman and is now being a transphobic crybaby because she lost. She's not the real winner when she finished second. Another girl was faster. Again, no, a boy was faster. So now this poor girl is going to have to be competing with men just because a girl couldn't accept the fact that she lost. So poor girl being the biological boy. Oh, now the biological boy has to go compete with men. Like, it's sad to see that the transgender community still to this day hasn't been accepted. And why people felt the need to bring up this student's gender identity is beyond invasive. Because it was obvious. Nobody had to bring it up. It was obvious. Bigots are bigots are bigots. Shut up. Like, think about this. Again, this is a 14-year-old girl who is just speaking the truth. Like, hey, I was the best of the best, and then I got crushed by a biological boy. And, you know, one of the things about Annalie in her remarks that you just heard is, and I was there for him, I introduced Annalie at the event, and, you know, she took great pains when I think she didn't really have to tell this crowd of 500 plus conservatives, you know, this isn't about the transgender runner. You know, I've also seen horrible things said about what is a 14-year-old boy. And she made it very clear that she wasn't okay with that either. And this clearly hasn't worked out well for transgender athletes. It clearly hasn't worked out well for female athletes. So she had, clearly standing up on stage, the maturity and the empathy to be able to make sure that, hey, this is about the people making these decisions. This is about the adults who have put us, both of us, in this position. And so then for adults to turn around and say, you know, you're a bigot, you're a transphobe, whatever it is horrifying. But it reminded me of a story we started the week with. So remember how I did a legitimate bona fide news story on this show about how an adult teacher was moonlighting as the orgasmic drag king jacking off? And I pointed out that that's incredibly inappropriate and shows poor judgment. Remember how all the news outlets that ran to this drag king's defense and all evil conservative Brandy is just cyberbullying? Remember, Nicole, when I was accused of cyberbullying because I did a bona fide news story about an adult where I factually just laid out the fact that this adult was calling themselves in public-facing social media profiles an orgasmic drag king jacking off, and all the news outlets say, oh, Gig Harbor teacher quits, cites cyberbullying. Pierce County teacher and drag king resigns from school district amid cyberbullying. So look, I know these are two separate stories, but there's a real common theme here. You know, when I did that story, bona fide news story, it was the left accusing me of cyberbullying. Oh, Brandy, you're such a bully. That's horrible. What side of the political aisle do you think is bullying Annalie? You think Republicans are bullying Annalie? No. It's the lefties. And so the lefties don't, they lash out if they don't like something. But if you point out something they're doing that's obviously problematic, that's bullying. You can't bully us, but we can bully you. You can't bully an adult, but we can bully a 14-year-old girl. Yeah, give me a break. Annalie is my hero too. So I hope that there is no, you know, I think Annalie is tough enough. She got up and spoke in front of all those adults. She's tough enough to deal with some nameless, faceless, basement-dwelling losers who want to call her a transphobe. And I've met her parents, and I know that's because her parents are tough enough to raise a girl who's tough enough to stand up for herself. So I'm not worried about Annalie. I think she can deal with a little bit of ridiculous, out-of-control adults. But again, as she said, she shouldn't have to. She shouldn't be in this position. The transgender athlete shouldn't be in this position because adults should have enough common sense to realize that we should not be allowing two people who were born very differently with different levels of strength and endurance and ability, we shouldn't put them in a position to have to compete against one another. So we're not letting this one go. And thank you to everyone who shared Annalie's remarks because the whole world ought to see them. And that's how we start to make positive change. Okay. Not all Democrats are created equal is the theme of this next segment. I know I have a lot of conservatives and a lot of Republicans who watch this show, and the situation that we're in Washington state is very clear. We have a very, very blue state. It gets more blue by the day in terms of elected leadership. And Democrats in Olympia are getting very, very close to reaching a supermajority in the Senate and before long a supermajority in the House. We've had a Democrat in the governor's office for 40 years. So as they consolidate those majorities and as they have in certain legislative districts made it so impossible for a Republican to win that Republicans don't even run, what you're going to start to see the Democratic Party doing in Washington state, which is a very progressive party, borderline socialist. I mean, they've endorsed socialist candidates. So they can't really distance themselves from that. Is they're then going to, amongst their own ranks, seek to eliminate any dissent whatsoever. So they've done this before, right? So State Senator Mark Mullett, a few cycles ago, he's a very moderate Democrat who is very pro-business. And he'd been standing in the way of some environmental policy and taxation policies that Governor Inslee supported. And so what did they do? Well, Governor Inslee, for the first time in his political career, supported a Democratic primary challenger to a sitting Democrat. So tried to unseat a sitting Democrat with a more progressive Democrat as a punishment. Like, hey, you're standing in the way, even though you're a Democrat, you're standing in the way of my environmental policies or whatever it is. So we're going to try to remove you from your seat and replace you with someone who's further to the left. And Mark Mullett ended up keeping his seat, but only by a few dozen votes. And who do you think saved Mark Mullett's seat? Republicans did. In fact, that was out in East King County. And you know who came to Mark Mullett's rescue? One of several Republicans? Dave Reichert. Dave Reichert at the time sent out a blast to his supporters because he, you know, was the congressman for the 8th Congressional District, which Mark Mullett was within, his district was. So Dave Reichert figured, well, I've got a lot of Republican supporters, and so I need Republicans to know you can't just leave this race blank because there's two Ds competing. We've got to support Mark Mullett because he's a different kind of Democrat. He's the better of the two options, and we need to get him across the finish line so we don't got some cuckoo lefty taking over. And so we have a scenario very similar to that this legislative session. And I wanted to make sure to tell any Republicans watching, first of all, in any instance where it's two Democrats, because you're going to see that more and more often, you've got to figure out who the more reasonable Democrat is. But there's one race in particular that if you live in Kirkland, basically east to Duval and Sammamish, you probably live in the 45th legislative district. The incumbent in that district is Representative Larry Springer. Well, Representative Larry Springer is in the fight of his career against an uber far left candidate named Melissa Demyan. So again, if you're in Duval, Kirkland, Sammamish, check and see if you're in the 45th legislative district. Your state senator would be Monka Dhingra. One of your state representatives would be Roger Goodman. So if that sounds familiar, this is your district. So in the primary election, Larry Springer got 49% of the vote and Melissa Demyan got 48% of the vote. And in fact, the difference between the two of them was 499 votes. So very, very close. Let me tell you a little bit about Melissa Demyan. Well, first, I've got some pictures of her and some of her friends. Let's see. Rosie O'Donnell, good friend of hers, apparently. Oh, is that AOC? Oh, yes. I like it when they post pictures of who they support and who supports them. So they make it very easy for us to tell, like, the company you keep, right? But it's more than just who you're surrounded by. Like, I've taken pictures of people who I'm not politically aligned with. And so that's not really fair necessarily to say, oh, just because she has a picture with AOC, then she must be a far, far left Democrat. I got pictures of all sorts of people. But it's the policy that she disagrees with Larry Springer on. So as I said, Larry Springer, like, I'm not doing this segment for Larry Springer. I don't really know him that well. I know he's taken some votes that I don't particularly agree with. And so certainly we have our differences of opinion. But this is about supporting someone who will be a no vote on issues that are very, very bad for things like the business community and someone who will absolutely be lockstep with the progressive left. So it's funny because on Melissa Demyan's website, she has this little tab and it's called Receipts, I think. And in it, she vilifies Larry Springer for all these horrible votes he took, suggesting that she would have voted differently, right? Well, when you read it, I'm in there like, yeah, Larry Springer. Yeah, like all these votes that he took that are very rational, where he voted against some people in his own party and where he voted very much in line with how Republicans or moderates would have preferred that he vote. So a few things. So again, this is from her website. She's using these as negatives, right? So she's saying, oh, Larry Springer voted against House Bill 1589. Well, you know what that was, right? House Bill 1589 was the gas ban that they passed at 2 a.m. He voted against it. That's a great vote. That's a good reason for a Republican to support him against this progressive challenger. Let's see here. Also, this is a big one because this will come up again this session. He voted against the bill to give unemployment benefits to striking workers. That failed just barely. So what she's saying is she would support that, letting people who go on strike voluntarily tap in to our unemployment benefit fund. Wild stuff. And then she has this whole section on his votes on affordable housing, saying that he voted to end the Inslee eviction moratorium during COVID-19. Like, hell yeah, that thing went on for way too long. He voted against changes to the Landlord-Tenant Act that would have increased tenant protections, we know, to an unreasonable level at the time of this insane abuse of tenant protections. He also voted against a bill that would have increased the time a tenant has to pay or vacate before eviction proceedings, something that would have worsened our current eviction crisis, and so on and so on. So it's funny because she's got these whole, like, look at all these bad things he did. But anyone, any reasonable Democrat, anyone in the middle, and certainly anyone on the right would look at those and be like, I'm glad he voted against those things, or I'm glad he supported things like ending the Inslee eviction moratorium. So bottom line is this, and what I want, even if you're not in the 45th legislative district, to take away is not all Democrats are created equal. And if you're a Republican, sometimes you just got to suck it up and fill in a circle for a Democrat and do your homework. And again, this is going to happen more and more often. And in solid Democratic districts where you've got someone who is daring to dissent from what their party wants to do, they are going to try to get rid of them, just like they did to Mark Mullett, just like they did to Steve Hobbs. Steve Hobbs was a moderate in the Senate. He was blocking legislation Governor Inslee wanted. And so Governor Inslee plucked him out and said, you can be Secretary of State when that seat was vacant. But it was just to get him out of the Senate. So the number of moderate Democrats in Olympia is dwindling. And if Republicans don't do something to help save them, then we're going to have people like Melissa Demyan, who are making it to Olympia and will not stand in the way of absolutely insane leftist borderline socialist policies. So again, if you're in the 45th legislative district, and you are a moderate, rational Democrat, or you're a Republican, you need to help Larry Springer keep his seat. And one thing I'll say, stop it with the freaking write-in candidate bull crap. Because in the primary, there were 968 write-ins, and the difference between these two was only 499 votes. So I anticipate it's going to be a really, really close race. So don't write in someone for the sake of writing it in. We got to, and again, I'm not doing that for Larry Springer. Like, he's taking some votes that, you know, I don't agree with. But I can tell you that he's going to be a lot better for the people of Washington State than his far leftist, AOC, Rosie O'Donnell-friendly opponent, Melissa Demyan. So, Larry Springer it is, okay? Look at me. Wow, I'm just so bipartisan. It's awesome. All right, if you're thinking about selling your home at some point this year, or hell, in the next year too, we're getting dangerously close to 2025, reach out to our friend Wes Jones. I think you'll find, you know, check with a few real estate agents, but what he has to offer, their marketing strategy, all of that, it's just, it's so far above and beyond what you're going to get from other real estate agents. We've had many undivided viewers and listeners who have used Wes Jones when they went to sell their home, including Mike Boggs, a retired Seattle police officer who was moving to Arizona, selling his home of 30 years, and he was just overwhelmed with gratitude for how fast Will was able to sell it.
Wes came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were, and he mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it, and it was, I think, the smartest thing we've ever done as far as selling a house. We sold in 6 days for a full asking price. It was really amazing, especially in, you know, this isn't the greatest climate for house sales right now, and that's one of the concerns we had was we're, you know, building a house, and so you have to kind of time this correctly so that you have the proceeds from the house that you're selling to put towards the house that you're going to be buying or building. And we actually put on the market a little sooner than we thought we needed to. And it sold so fast that it was, this is fantastic.
Yeah. So that's the difference. Sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com. It'll start by giving you a free market analysis so you can see how much your home is worth, how well positioned it is, given the market pressures, et cetera. Sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. Guess what, guys? Guess what? We're going to do not one, not two, three editions of Unbelievable. This Mayor Bruce Harrell story in Seattle gets weirder and weirder and more unbelievable and more unbelievable. So to catch you up, in case you're not caught up, Mayor Bruce Harrell, who claims he's a public safety mayor, supports the police department, was just at a gala on Friday supporting the police department, all of these things, we need to hire more officers. He allegedly is supporting the campaign of a socialist candidate for State House of Representatives to represent the Seattle area. So Sean Scott made this claim, and Bruce Harrell has been given ample opportunity to say it's not true, but he, for some reason, refuses to do so.
We're happy to have the support of the actual 43rd Legislative District Democrats. Proud to be supported in this race as well by Planned Parenthood, by the Washington State Council of Firefighters, and actually by the mayor of Seattle as well.
Sean Scott says you endorsed him for a state legislature run.
Come on, man.
I just wanted to ask.
You're recording right now, right?
Yeah, but is it a yes or a no?
I'm not going to answer anything right now.
It's insane. So we've reached out numerous times to the mayor's public information team via email, via text. We know others have as well. I know Jonathan Cho has. I know Jason Rance has. For some reason, for obvious reasons, the old media is asleep at the wheel. I don't know why. If they're not responding to us because we're quote unquote conservative or whatever it is, which they shouldn't be able to pick and choose because they're paid with our money to be public affairs people. So we're paying them with our money to ignore us. Sort of weird, right? And I pay tax money as a media company. So yeah, you should respond after, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 attempts. So I don't know why old media wouldn't jump on this as a story, like a pro-police mayor endorsing someone who's a police abolitionist. It's not just that he's a socialist, he's a police abolitionist. And he was celebrating cop cars being lit on fire in the city of Seattle in 2020. So it's insane. It's a news story by any definition of a news story, but the media has failed, and that's why they're doing so poorly. So anyway, new wrinkle in this. So Undivided viewer Beth was at a public safety forum last night. And God bless her, she went up to Deputy Mayor Tim Burgess. And she was recording, and Tim Burgess, very close with the mayor. Tim Burgess is also a point for a lot of the mayor's work in the public safety realm. So this is the perfect person to ask, like, what the hell is going on? Beth did that. Here's a clip.
Who are you, by the way? I'm Tim.
I'm Beth.
Beth, Tim. What do you do?
I just want to know why the mayor has endorsed Sean Scott.
He hasn't.
He hasn't?
But no, he has not.
Why doesn't he come out and say that?
He hasn't taken a position in that campaign at all.
Sean Scott says he has endorsed him.
Yeah.
And
I'm not
going
to talk to you anymore. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you very much. Okay. Nice to meet you, Beth.
Good to meet you.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk to you anymore. Now, he's probably just annoyed that she's recording and, like, ambushing him, which is fine, but you're still the deputy mayor. You know, you're kind of fair game out in a public setting like that. You just did a whole public safety panel that was recorded, and it's a legitimate question, right? So he's saying unequivocally he has not. Now, I've always known Tim Burgess to be an honest man. I don't believe that Tim Burgess would sit there and lie knowing he was being recorded for the mayor. So again, that leads us to believe or to wonder a couple things. Is Sean Scott lying, which was my initial thought process? Is Mayor Bruce Harrell, if that's the case, right? If he doesn't support him, why wouldn't he just come out and say, no, I don't support his campaign? So this whole thing has gotten to the point of, it's past the point of ridiculousness. And we're not letting it go because, again, it matters. And in fact, we have on the Sunday show this week, the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, Mike Solon. And I haven't spoken to Mike about whether he has any insider information about this, but I can't imagine that his rank and file is very happy that the mayor won't come out and just set the record straight. Now, something tells me this is, okay, if I put on my calm down Brandy hat, Calm down, Brandy Hat. And I think about this, like, very logically and knowing how the inner workings of the political world sort of work and the push and pull of who you're associated with matters, etc. My thought is that in private, and again, this is my complete educated guess, so just take it for what it's worth. My thought is that in private, Mayor Harrell expressed some sort of throwaway support to Sean Scott. Sean Scott took that, went on stage, said, the mayor supports me. And the mayor is now in this position where either he has to call Sean Scott a liar or distance himself from Sean Scott. And if he wants to run for re-election, he might not want to anger the far left sort of wing of the party in Seattle, the activist class that can be very, very nasty and vitriolic. So he's just hoping he can wait it out and move on and we'll let it go. Oh, Bruce, we're not going to let it go. So we're going to try again to reach out and just like, let us put this issue to rest. If it's Sean Scott who is misrepresenting something, that's fine. But you cannot, I said this, it would be a betrayal of the men and women of the Seattle Police Department to have a mayor who claims to support them, who claims to support additional hiring, who claims to be pro-public safety, turn around and say, no, I support the candidacy of a police abolitionist who celebrated acts of violence in 2020. So I want to let you know that we're not going to let it go. But thank you for viewer Beth for so diligently going to get Tim Burgess. So speaking of surreptitiously recorded clips, although she did tell him you're being recorded, usually I'm opposed to if a politician is out in a public setting, but for non-business reasons. I don't like people confronting them. It just bothers me. Because if they're with your family or your kids, you're having dinner, you know, when they were like attacking like anyone in Trump's family who would be at dinner and then they'd go in, like make their life miserable. I think that's mean. And I just don't do that. I don't like the meanness. Now, in this scenario, I might make an exception for Bob Ferguson. So there was a high schooler who Bob Ferguson was allegedly at like a track meet and his kids were running. But he was like somewhere standing off alone about to make a phone call. So the only reason I'm like, okay, he's separated from the whole scenario. A high schooler goes up to him and asks him a few questions. And it exposes so much of what's wrong with Bob Ferguson as a quote unquote leader. So as you know, because you see it in every single commercial break, Bob Ferguson has been spending a ton of money on TV to paint Dave Reichert as some right-wing lunatic, right? But also some of those ads you're seeing were paid for by outside money. You can tell at the bottom, like, you know, no candidate authorized this ad and it'll have this or whatever it is. And so some people call that support dark money. As opposed to like Bob Ferguson's campaign where you have money coming in, you can go on the PDC and look at like who's funding these things, etc. So Bob has made this big shtick on the campaign trail about I'm the only candidate who doesn't accept corporate PAC money. And that's true for this campaign. But in the past, as you know, Bob Ferguson has long accepted money from some of the biggest corporations in the Pacific Northwest and across the country. So now he wants to act all righteous and sanctimonious and saying, yeah, this time I'm not doing it because is big corporate money bad, and he won't acknowledge that he took money from like all the big corporations in the past. So all of that, you know, to explain this clip. So this kid, high schooler, goes up to him. Watch the exchange.
Just wondering what your like your thoughts are on dark money in politics right now.
Not a fan. Had a lawsuit about it. We made him pay millions of dollars. You know, so. Yeah, it's, when you're out there running, it's no fun to be dealing with dark money. Okay.
I was just wondering your thoughts on like the dark money being spent against Dave Reichert on Washington's airwaves right now. Like, if you had any opinions
that's
on that.
That's fire politics for him. Yeah.
Think about that. He literally says, oh, yeah, dark money's bad. It's really hard to be out there running against dark money. And then this kid goes, yeah, but what about the dark money being spent against Dave Reichert? And he said, that's part of politics. You cannot come up with a better 20-second encapsulation of who Bob Ferguson is as a politician, as a person, and as a quote-unquote leader, is that he hates dark money, but if it's benefiting me, great. That's who he is. Anything that benefits him politically, no matter how immoral, he's fine with. That's always been who he is. And this clip from a brave high schooler really encapsulates that. All right. Oh, I didn't even go into, I missed it. Oh my God, I'm sorry. I promised everybody. Can you just play back to back Unbelievable so I get into my third one? Okay, that was for Bob Ferguson's segment. And now we're going to get to our third segment of Unbelievable. Ooh. this is believable, but also it's freaking unbelievable. You know, we've exposed so much of what's happening in our public education system, from academic decline to political and social indoctrination. And there's so much pressure right now on the superintendent of public instruction to do better. You know, the Seattle Times endorsed him, even though they said he refuses to take responsibility for this sour state of education and for the low test scores and all of these things because they're just hopeless ideologues. But, you know, our test scores are failing. Kids are failing. Enrollment is down. So school districts are having to make cuts because parents would rather teach their kid at home or pay, you know, out of pocket hefty costs for private school, because our public school systems just are not focused on what they should be focused on, which is just teaching kids and preparing them for higher education and for frankly, the workforce and life. So anyway, I guess I'm not surprised, but it just continues to stun me that even under pressure, even under the glaring light of public scrutiny, our state education system continues to double, triple, quadruple down on the wrong things. So the State Board of Education just released its 2025 legislative priorities. It's set to vote on these to adopt them. Three pillars of advocacy they put out. If you're watching the show today, you'll notice at the center of this weird chart they've created, advocacy for educational equity. So their pillars of advocacy are all built around the central theme and commitment to educational equity. It has its strategic plan, educational equity, and all these, whatever it is. And then it says, you know, areas of responsibility, and then legislative platform. That's the one that we really want to hone in on, because the legislative platform is what they're going to literally go to Olympia and advocate for when it comes to educational funding, et cetera, et cetera. So under the lens of equity, here is, honest to God, the State Board of Education's 2025 legislative platform. We took the pains to highlight for you all the mentions of things around inclusivity and equity. Now, again, you're going to see very little on here about academic success or improving academic success. 2025 legislative platform, an equitable and inclusive K through 12 education system where every student is empowered with the knowledge and skills they need to thrive in a changing world. One of their four platforms, create inclusive and supporting learning environments, mental and behavioral health support, support a diverse workforce, professional development in cultural responsiveness, ethnic studies, trauma-informed care, and social emotional learning, inclusive and historically accurate curricula, protect students' civil rights. Are we not protecting students' civil rights? Is that something that in Washington State, one of the most progressive states in the country, we're not already doing? Equitable access to powerful learning opportunities. Ensure quality implementation of since time immemorial, which apparently is like this law that was put into place where teachers get to choose how much time they spend on tribal sovereignty content throughout the year. So one of the four legislative platform priorities for the State Board of Education has to do with making sure that they implement the new law that gives teachers the power to choose how much time to spend on tribal sovereignty content. While, like, across the board, test scores are failing. And the State Board of Education knows that, and their own graphics illustrate that. So they have these indicators of educational system health that they track. So these are some indicators where it'll tell them basically across the public education system whether things are going well or whether things are going not so well. What is the health of our education system? Well, shock of the century, things aren't going well. So for instance, one of them is kindergarten readiness. These are all most decent data. So some of it's 2024 data, some of it's 2023 data. Kindergarten readiness, 52.5%. Fourth grade reading, 49%. Eighth grade math, 32.3%. And you know what freaks me out about that? Then it has the high school graduation rate at 83.6%. So, like, first of all, it should be 100%, but also that doesn't really line up when you're telling me eighth grade math is at 32.3%, and across the state, our test scores are about at a failing average. So how can you have 83.6% of people who are able to graduate if, like, half aren't meeting basic standards? And then the thing that really gets me is it says their target at the bottom. The 2029 target for each indicator is 90%. So less than 4 years from now, they want fourth grade reading to be at 90% when it's at 49%. They want eighth grade math to be at 90% when it's at 32.3%. They want kindergarten readiness to be at 52% or at 90% when it's at 52%. So first of all, that goal is like every goal the government sets, completely unrealistic. But as Nicole pointed out in show prep, she's like, shouldn't it be 100%? Should the goal of the State Board of Education, if you're already going to throw out meaningless goals, right? Like, oh, we're going to end carbon emissions by 2050 or whatever it is, which you know you can never accomplish. Wouldn't you just set your sights high for education at least and say the target for each of these indicators is 100%? Like not even, no, it's 90%. We're not even going to reach 90% because some of them are at 30%. And you wonder why. Well, you go back to the legislative platform of the State Board of Health, and it's all focused on equity and social-emotional learning and civil rights and inclusivity and time since memorial and all this stuff. It's like, look, you know, some of this on its face, right? Like, hey, quality implementation of since time immemorial. Do I think that there's a place in K-12 education where kids should be taught about tribal sovereignty and Native American history and all that? Yeah, of course. That's part of our history as a country, and it's part of our present as a country as well. Do I think it should be one of the four legislative platforms of the State Board of Education? No, I don't. All of this stuff is just insane. Like, for instance, where is this one about the, inclusive and historically accurate curricula? Are you telling me you haven't had historically accurate curricula? Like, how long have we had public schools in Washington State? And look, I know there's this whole debate over like, oh, Christopher Columbus and how he's taught and good or bad and all this stuff. But it's like, yeah, it should be just a general, as society learns more things and historical context is needed, that shouldn't have to be one of the four platforms for the legislative session from the State Board of Education. The State Board of Education should be focused on improving educational outcomes. So it's just wild stuff. Was I saying the State Board of Health the whole time? State Board of Education. Sorry. In my head, I think I spent so long talking about the worthless State Board of Health that I probably remember that. Maybe I didn't. Anyway, absolutely unbelievable. So a little quick trifecta of unbelievable today. Okay, as you guys know, we do a weekly segment with the Rental Housing Association of Washington, if you're a landlord. And we do this because we want to continue to raise awareness for the issues that have cropped up around the eviction moratoriums and around an eviction backlog and all of this. So by the way, and you can put it up, Nicole, if you are a landlord in our state, a small to mid-sized landlord, you need to become a member of RHA because they're going to help you navigate all this utter nonsense out there. And it's only $260 a year. So if you really feel like, gosh, some of these laws are so hard to continue to be a landlord, make sure that you reach out to RHA, become a member, and you kind of are part of this network of people who can help you manage that. So speaking of this segment, so we do this every week, but I actually got invited, was it Tuesday? Yeah. Tuesday, after the show, remember we had to do a short show and I ran out the door. It was because I was invited to speak on a panel at the Rental Housing Association's annual conference, which is called Engage. And they were hosting a bunch of different panels with elected leaders from both sides of the political aisle talking about legislative priorities. But I specifically was on a panel with two others talking about how the media covers housing issues. And it was a fascinating conversation because obviously there's a lot to discuss. You know, one of the reasons we wanted to partner with RHA in this way, because I'll just give you a little background here. So RHA was initially going to buy advertising on our show, and we were going to run some spots, you know, encouraging landlords to become members of RHA. And Nicole and I said, well, you know, we were at the time covering all these landlord issues, like with Jason Roth and Jaskaran Singh and like all these deadbeat tenants that were being protected by state law. And we said, well, why don't we do a segment every week? Because we think, you know, rather than doing traditional ads, there's all this knowledge that we can impart upon people in this realm. But also we want to keep this issue and the pressure on this issue up leading up to the legislative session, when they're no doubt going to revisit rent control and some other policies that are only going to hurt the availability of rental housing in the state of Washington. So that's why we turned it into a weekly segment. But anyway, so I was on this panel and there was this really interesting topic came up that I guess I've never really thought about the extent to which this happens. And it has to do with like using captured language, using the language of the politicians who are trying to push certain policies, and the media then using that language in their reporting. So they're kind of becoming tools of the politicians. So a fantastic example of this, and start to look for this, not only in coverage of housing issues, but other issues, where the media just uncritically adopts the language of the politicians who are pushing something. For instance, on rent control. Remember what they called rent control in Olympia when they were pushing it last legislative session and in the news media? They called it rent stabilization. They didn't, in fact, Democrats in Olympia would push back when anyone would call it rent control. Don't call it rent control. Call it rent stabilization. And the Washington media was more than happy to oblige. All the stories we looked at, rent stabilization, Seattle Times, rent stabilization bill stalls, King 5, Washington State rent stabilization House bill heads to Senate. So, and it's just rent control. You can call it, you can package a, you know, on a nice and put a little bow on it, you can put lipstick on the pig, but it's still rent control. And people know what rent control is if you tell them, hey, this is a rent control bill and it has this kind of negative, for good reason, connotation to it. But if you water it down and call it, no, it's just rent stabilization. We're just stabilizing rents. That's intentional, right? It's captured language. And then they get the media to pick it right up and not call it rent control. And so then everybody else hears rent stabilization. Call it rent stabilization. It's like they're all hypnotized. So one of the things that's important to recognize there is when it's happening, when words are being chosen specifically to influence people's minds and to make them less likely to support or oppose a policy, and then to call media outlets out for it. I think that's the only way to fix it, right? Another example of this was something we actually broke the story on here, because this the language on this one was so watered down that it went like almost unnoticed until it was in effect. So remember, it was the Covenant Home Ownership Program. Well, that sounds interesting. Covenant Home Ownership Program. You know, you don't have like a visceral reaction to that, right? But what was it actually? What was it actually? Well, the backer of the bill, when the bill was finally signed, you know, they'd use the Covenant Home Ownership Program, Covenant Home Ownership Program the whole time to get it under the radar, and the media called it that, Covenant Home Ownership. But then, you know, when it was already passed, even the backer of the bill came out and used the language that should have been used the whole time. Here it is.
You may not have heard, but this is the first in the nation statewide reparations bill.
Reparations. And reparations has a certain connotation, right? A negative connotation. Most people don't support reparations nationwide. So they didn't want to call it reparations while it was being debated in Olympia. But now every person who goes out and buys a home in Washington State is paying reparations, but they didn't know it because it was called the Covenant Home Ownership Program, and it was completely under the radar. And the media used the language that lawmakers used. And so now what does that do? Well, it increases the cost of home ownership, right? And so if you care about housing issues, it's just, I mean, and I also think it should be unconstitutional. I know that a similar program has been challenged in Illinois. But this is what happens when the media adopts the language used by politicians uncritically and doesn't just call things what they are. And they're just, I don't know if they're fooled into it. They just don't think twice. They don't understand that they're being used in that way. But that sort of thing is influencing so much of the bad policy and allowing it to get through on housing issues, on rental issues, housing availability, and all of that stuff. So just something really interesting that came up that I want you to look for. And if you see any other examples, really of anything, where that kind of captured language is being used by the media, let me know about it, because sometimes I don't notice these things. All right, that segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends at the Rental Housing Association of Washington. Again, if you are a landlord, a small to mid-sized landlord, you really should be a member of RHA, rhawa.org, rhawa.org. And also, their annual conference was huge. I was shocked how many people were there. And then I saw a friend of Wes Jones there. I didn't see Wes Jones himself, but there was just a lot of people there. And it was a really good time, and I was happy to be invited. All right. If you are struggling with your insurance right now, and there's a lot of reasons why people are struggling, you hear about this all the time. First, first of all, insurance rates are just through the roof. You know, crime crisis and things like that have a lot to do with it. But if you're having trouble finding a policy, finding a carrier to accept you, maybe you've had some claims and they don't want to take you on because you're too risky in this environment, you need to reach out to First Mark Insurance and do the First Mark Challenge. Mike and I did it. Nicole did it. Daryl and Meg are now members of the First Mark family. Undivided is insured through First Mark. And it's not because we don't get any sort of special rate. It was because they became a sponsor on our show. We decided to check it out, and what they have to offer is just superior. First of all, it takes a lot of burden away from you to have to navigate the insurance market on your own. What they do with the First Mark Challenge, totally free. They go over your current insurance, talk to you about your insurance needs. Then they go out, they shop all the carriers for you, and they come back to you with a plan and a proposal. Sometimes that might be, hey, you've got the best insurance that you can get, so I would just keep it. And they don't even pursue your business after that. So they're just really honest people, and you never pay First Mark Insurance a dollar for their services. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, moving right along. So a lot happening in Florida. So it's good we have a weekly segment called Florida Report to talk about it. So obviously at the back-to-back hurricanes. And so Miranda was fine, by the way. So many of you guys are so cute. Like, how's Miranda? So Miami was pretty unscathed. It came up and around and hit kind of the armpit of Florida. And so Miami wasn't in the direct path, in case you were wondering. And we know she's okay because she joins us today for our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, you're all right. Miami was spared pretty much, right? Just high wind or...
Yeah, we got some gusts of wind, nothing serious. A couple tornadoes touched down north of us, but we remain unscathed.
Yeah, well, this one, I mean, you've been through quite a few hurricanes down there. It's just interesting how these things come around. I feel like it wasn't quite as powerful as they had originally feared it would be. Is that kind of the vibe you're getting? I think it went from a Cat 4 to a Cat 3 before it even hit.
Yeah, it did. And as soon as it hit land, it dropped down to a 2 pretty quickly. It still brought quite a bit of storm surge with it, but it was not as serious as they thought it was going to be. I mean, people still are dealing with a lot of like property loss, flooding. There's still search and rescue efforts underway, you know, pretty standard stuff. But I think I watched DeSantis do a press conference earlier today, and he said that thankfully it was not nearly as bad as they were anticipating, which we can always be thankful for that. So.
Yeah. Well, and it's also the 1-2 punch, right? It's like, okay, you're still dealing with Helene and we have limited resources as it is because FEMA spent so much rich money on the illegal immigration crisis. And so then you have all these stretched resources. And so you're dealing with that. And then another one hits. A couple things, since this is a political show after all. So first of all, Ron DeSantis, like, this is what he does best. Do you agree?
Yes, I think we were talking about this on the phone the other day. Like, this is the Ron DeSantis that I wish other people could have seen, because I think that this is like the epitome of what a leader should be doing in crises like this. He is articulate, on point, knowledgeable. He answers questions. He's very direct. He knows what he needs. He knows what needs to be in place. And he's super confident and very like, watching him makes you feel kind of at ease, like he's got this under control. And I wish when he was still up for the presidential nomination, I still wish that people would have seen this DeSantis.
Yeah, I mean, he's, and part of that is his own fault, right? Like, he focuses on a lot of like, you know, wedge issues, which is fine. But this is, I think, where he shines. Someone online was saying he's the LeBron James of hurricane preparedness. But let me play you. So, you know, kind of the drama, right? So, allegedly, Kamala Harris had tried to call him and he didn't answer. And she was all like, oh, he's just making it political. But like Biden turned around and had a press conference saying that he'd been in contact with the governor and everything was great and they have a great working relationship. So Kamala Harris just seemed sour that he didn't pick up the phone for her. So Ron DeSantis was asked about it on CNBC and here's his answer.
I am working with the President of the United States. I'm working with the Director of FEMA. I'm marshaling all my state assets. We've been doing this now nonstop for over 2 weeks between Helene and this. And so if there's anything I can leverage to benefit my people, I'm going to do it. The fact of the matter is they put out a story saying I didn't even know she was trying to reach me, but she has no role in this process. And I've been dealing with these storms in Florida under both Trump and Biden. Neither of them ever politicized it. And in fact, all the storms I've dealt with under this administration, although I've worked well with the president, she has never called in Florida. She has never offered any support. So what she's doing is she's trying to inject herself into this because of her political campaign. So as the governor here who's leading this, I don't have time for those games. I don't care about her campaign. Obviously, I'm not a supporter of hers, but she has no role in this process. And so I'm working with the people I need to be working with. We're leveraging the resources I need to be leveraging. And for her to try to say that my focus should be on catering to her rather than worrying about my own people just shows she doesn't understand what it means to respond to these natural disasters.
Brutal. Brutal.
Brutal. Oh, I mean, it's, and so, like, honest, you know, and straight to the point. And it's so true. I just feel like for her to even if, say, she did reach out and he didn't answer, the correct response, in my opinion, would be like, you know, if he needs anything, I'm here. Like, she doesn't have to be like, he didn't answer my phone call. You know?
How dare he? Oh, like he has nothing else to be doing. And I mean, if she were, you know, if Biden, for some reason, weren't communicating with him, maybe different. But as he points out, you know, she's been the vice president for 3 years, and typically it falls on the president to have those conversations. And as the vice president, she wasn't, and maybe that's fine. But now, because she's running a campaign, all of a sudden she wants to be the one calling the governors and stuff. Like, okay, that just, it screams. So let me play you a clip of Kamala. So she's under all this criticism, right? For, you know, making it about her, like, he won't answer my phone calls. Then she's doing the rounds, like having beers with Colbert on Colbert Report, you know, not taking it seriously. So this is from the White House X account. So this is an official government, not her campaign account, where she is calling the mayor of St. Petersburg. And this is, you know, and you have to think of it in the context of all the scrutiny she's been under. So as someone who's dealt with hurricanes, who's had to evacuate, who's had to do all these things, I want you to genuinely tell me, politics aside, how this clip comes across to you.
Mayor Welch's Kamala Harris, how are you doing?
Madam Vice President, thank you so much for checking in on us. You know, we're getting ready, we're prepared, and looking forward to rebuilding after this storm passes through.
I know that you had requested that FEMA have a full-service disaster recovery center in St. Petersburg, and that has been confirmed that that has happened. And they're working with you to determine the right location. How's that coming along?
Well, thank you. That makes a big difference. We did get a chance to chat with Administrator Criswell, and that's really important to St. Pete to have that full-service recovery center. You know, the outreach from the White House and from FEMA has been excellent, and we're really going to need your help to get the city stood back up, but really appreciate your partnership, Madam Vice President.
Okay, well, know that you got it, and know that you are invited to give any feedback about what you might need in real time, because you're the leadership on the ground, so you know what your folks need.
We'll absolutely do that, and we appreciate your partnership.
Please take care of yourself, Mayor, and I'll just stay in touch with your team.
So again, as someone who's, you know, been in hurricane zones, et cetera, watching that reaction.
It's a phone call I don't even think that I should have to know about, because it sounded like something that was like, it's like, this is stuff that's already happening, but she had to make it like known. Oh, we're helping you. We're going to put FEMA. It's just, it gives me like pick me girl, where she's just like trying to be relevant, the center of attention, and make things a little bit about her. And I just, it's honestly just like in very poor taste, in my opinion.
Yeah. Well, and I always think about the organization that had to happen for that call and recording. It's like they had to be like, okay, make sure the mayor of St. Pete's is somewhere visible. He's taking the call on speakerphone. We're going to have, you know, you record it on your end, and then we're going to have her call on speakerphone and record it on our end. Then we're going to edit it together to make sure that they know that she had this like really blasé phone call. You know, it's 100% poor taste, but it just shows the point that Ron DeSantis was making, which is like she's trying to make it about her and her political campaign, and we have stuff to do.
Yeah, he's like, she's like, oh, you know, we're doing this for you, right? He's like, yeah. It's just so
sure do.
I just I hate it.
It's so bad. I got to ask you about one more thing, just because this guy took the internet by storm, literally. Part of me is like, don't give him attention because he did something stupid. But then it's like, he's such a character. So you got to look for these little storylines that'll bring joy to people. So they're calling him Lieutenant Dan. Sounds like he lives on his boat.
Yeah, so he's been experiencing homelessness for about 10 years and then moved to Florida and got on this sailboat. But he has an amputated leg, and that's kind of where this nickname on the internet came from, because Lieutenant Dan in Forrest Gump did survive a hurricane on his shrimp boat with amputated legs. So I think the nickname is well fit, but he basically got a lot of attention. There's a TikToker that goes by the name of Tampa Terrence, and he has been covering Lieutenant Dan through the last two hurricanes and putting him on TikTok to millions of views, to just like staying in touch with them, like his determination. It's just, he kind of won over the internet, and he refused to leave his boat, not only for Helene, but also for Milton. And he made it through last night as well.
Well, and it's not just like his boat is anywhere. His boat is in Tampa, right?
Yeah, so on it's in coast. Tampa. He didn't even sail it to safer waters. He's like, nah. If you see any clips, it's just like him poking his head out the window of his sailboat, like, I'm staying like, right here.
I'm here. I'm fine. Leave me alone. Yeah. I mean, what can you do? You know, are you going to go on and pry him off? Like, you can issue all the warnings you want. It was fascinating, though, because, like, his boat literally, like, you know, because the waters went up and up and up. And his boat was up and it was over, like, you know, some like railings that were inundated. And he said, there's this clip where he's like, actually, things are better off because my boat got washed.
And he also said, like, if it's going to flood, isn't it safer to be on my boat? Like, why would I want to be on the land? And then also, like, another like ray of sun in this story is Tampa Terrence helped raise on a GoFundMe page for him like $37,000 to buy a new boat. And he's also offered him a deal that if he agreed to live streaming some of his adventures on his boat, he would buy him a brand new boat.
Oh, that's amazing. Well, that's awesome. And I love stories like that. So like, obviously don't do that. You know, that's really stupid. But at the same time, you got to just take the joy and entertainment where you can when stuff like this happens. All right, Miranda. Well, let's hope we don't get any more down there. You guys deserve a break. But at the end of it, when the storm clears, you're still living in Florida and not Washington State. So there's that, you know.
It's true. And it is so nice out today. It is just blue skies, sunny, and the temperature dropped a little. So it's really nice.
Yeah. All right. Okay. We'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
It's not even controversial anymore. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Yeah, we were going to fit it in, but it happened kind of late. Biden had this press conference where he's been doing fine, but then he like went off on Donald Trump, like, help these people. There was this clip out today of 400 plus linemen who were being allowed to stay for free at Trump's Doral Golf Course. Doral, is it Doral? Doral Al. And that's like an expensive place, awesome rooms, and they're all coming in and streaming in. It's like, you know, Biden, just give me a freaking break. Anyway, we're fitting in a ton today. This might be highest story count of any show we've ever done. So a story we have not talked at all about on the show yet is what's happening with Boeing and the striking workers. And that's obviously very significant to Washington State. The latest, this from Forbes, Boeing withdraws offer made to striking factory workers. No further negotiations planned. Boeing said Tuesday it's withdrawn a pay raise offer made to striking factory workers after negotiations between both sides fell apart, extending the major work stoppage that began last month as a plane maker grapples with multiple financial and regulatory woes. So we figured in our weekly segment with Zach Abraham of Bulwark Capital, we'd talk about this because around here especially, people are very invested in Boeing stock and in the success of Boeing. Come to find out that Zach Abraham, like, really, 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 really hates Boeing stock, so he can explain. Boeing shares fell 3.4% on Wednesday, after this news came out that the company had suspended negotiations. So that in and of itself, you think not a huge deal?
Not really, but it's all part and part, right? Nobody's gonna attribute this to the way it should be attributed, which is this is just kind of one of the dominoes that's fallen, right? Just bad management decisions, meaning, you know, for instance, I think some of the demands that the workforce are making are pretty crazy, meaning they just resoundingly turned down a 30% pay increase, right? Which is crazy. Yeah. At the same time, the way that the company has managed the company and the way they have dealt with dealing with the wrapping up of employees' pensions and, you know, just the fact that people are walking around far more ashamed of, you know, it used to be you worked at Boeing and you led with that, right? It's something you were proud of. It built families. It built generations. It paid for kids' college. It provided wonderful retirements. And they still do some of that, but they, you know, they sullied their name and they made those people, you know, not nearly as proud to go to work and, you know, not wanting to tell people that's where they go to work. And they, so they retired early, they left and a bunch of that talent went out the door. And the next thing you know, you've got a workforce that's far less loyal, right? Because you haven't treated them as well and you've treated them as expendable. And you're kind of getting what you pay, you're getting what you want. Now you've got a workforce that's holding you hostage and asking for what I think any reasonable person would say are unreasonable requests. But this is the bed they made. And, you know, I think the workers are being unreasonable, but I don't blame them for being, Boeing's getting what they deserve.
Yeah, no sympathy for Boeing. So just from, I know this segment isn't designed to give people advice on what to do with their stocks and investments, et cetera. But, you know, just from the viewpoint of you have a lot of people in our region, and I'm sure a lot of our viewers and listeners who are invested in Boeing and in what their stocks do matter to them, right? And you're in the business of mitigating risk. But like, what do you do if you have a client who comes to you carrying a bunch of Boeing? And you're saying like they're rotten to the core and, you know, we won't. So how does that kind of work?
Well, it's tough because when we were first having these conversations back in 2018 and 2019, when we really started covering Boeing exclusively and we started realizing what the problems were, it was really easy. It was get out of the stock. Hmm. Right. But the stock at that point was trading, you know, 4 or 5X more than it currently is. Hmm. Something like that. You were at, I think you're up over $400 at one point. Now you're so let's say 3 to 3.5 times more than it is today. Today it's a little bit tough because A, you know that Boeing isn't going anywhere because of its affiliation with the federal government. But in terms of look through, I mean, you go look at the debt that's now on their balance sheet. I mean, I think going into this mess, they had $15 to $20 billion in debt and a massive pile of cash. Now, I haven't looked at it recently because it's just a clown show. Hmm. But I mean, I think they're looking at, you know, in excess of $40 or $45 billion in debt now. You're looking at falling margins, increased labor costs, increased input costs, right? We've been talking a lot about how bullish we are on commodities out into the future now because they haven't been invested in. I mean, when you look at Boeing's airplanes, you couldn't devise a more inflationary trap. Meaning they are exposed to all of the worst and most pernicious parts of inflation. So I'm not telling people to sell it. When I look at Boeing, I look at a company that if they make the right decisions and make the hard decisions and get the right management in there and gut the existing management structure, then I think they could be compelling. But as far as I'm sitting, they've got their management team is rotten to the core. If you want to go invest in a company that's got a rotten management team to the core and does really nasty stuff, good luck. Don't do it with my money because the chickens always come home to roost. So for me, regardless whether it goes up or down over the next year, who knows? To me, I am not going to put my money in the hands of guys who have proven to be idiots, unethical, dishonest at every turn. There's plenty of good companies out there and you don't need to take those kind of risks.
Yeah. And risk management is the number one focus of Bulwark Capital and Zach Abraham. So he knows a little bit something about it. If you would like to check out Bulwark Capital's risk management strategy, you can do that by getting their free common sense investing guide right now. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. And look, he's just looking at that as like, this is a company that has done a lot of stuff that makes it very vulnerable for folks. And so I appreciate the insight from Zach. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. It had to do with our story earlier about, you know, Democrats on Democrats or Republicans on Republicans. And what do you do if you're not a Republican? It's just two Republicans on the ticket. If you're not a Democrat, it's two Democrats on the ticket. So I asked our subscribers on Patreon, Locals and X, what do you do when there are two candidates of the same party on a ballot, but you don't align politically with that party? Do you leave that race blank? Do you choose the best option or do you fill in a circle at random? Nicole, what do you do?
Oh, I try to figure out who's the least damaging of the two.
Okay, good, good. I was a little worried. I was like, man, I hope nobody picks fill in a circle at random. Like, oh, that name looks nice. No, most of you are saying choose the best option, but not a small chunk saying you leave the race blank, which I would encourage you not to do. Taz says, I researched the candidates and picked the lesser of two evils. Better a left-wing candidate than a far-left nut job. Street, I'll do some research. We'll vote candidate, not party affiliation, but we now have a new write-in name in the future. Jack King Goff. Oh, yeah. Only if both the options are so bad that there is literally no difference between the two of them, then I might support you writing in Jack King Goff. I did a interview. I'll tell you after this. Hold on. Lucas Bonner, I often search to see if there's a write-in campaign that I find favorable. I'm fine with that. It's just like if, in this case, for instance, if there's more write-ins where it throws the race to, you know, because some of these legislative races, they're only going to be separated by dozens of votes. And so you got to really think about that. Haley says, I've always voted for the person, not the party, for who I feel would be best. Let's see what's happening over on locales. Weiss Castle, when in doubt, vote the incumbent out. I vote term limits, even if it isn't the law, which it should be. Yeah, but sometimes the incumbent.
See, now we just taught that lesson. What? Well, that's what we're saying. Don't always vote the incumbent out.
Because right, because Jerry Springer
could be worse.
Yeah. Well, over on X, a few people are saying that they choose one at random. Reagan says it depends. If one is clearly more radical than the other, I'll choose. But sometimes I leave it blank if there isn't a good option or I can't find good information to determine which candidate would be better. Yeah, I mean, if you feel like it's really a shot in the dark, then it might be better to leave it blank than make a guess, obviously.
But do the research.
You can do the research. You guys are smart. I mean, this show, you watch, if you watch the show every day, then you've got 5 hours of research every week. Okay, let's get to some other questions and comments. Bill Biz with a $20 super chat. Brandy, really enjoyed the Sundays with Subscribers with VJ's discussion about the adverse impact of the cap gains tax on the startup versus the established wealthy. The mainstream media simply ignores the nuance of this issue. Yeah, the Times came out, not surprisingly, and said vote no on 2109 to repeal the capital gains tax. I knew the Times would do that. So the Times is now 2 for 2. Well, it's two no, two yes on the initiatives, I guess more than you can expect from the Times. But, you know, maybe they were just like, let's please everyone. Nah. But you don't. But yeah, our Sundays with Subscribers this past week with Vijay Boyapati talking about, like, you know, the cap gains, first of all, it's a backdoor income tax. They will reduce it to the point where they can just tax everyone and get away with it and say, well, that's not constitutional because we did it via the tax on capital gains. But also just his description of how it hurts the tech sector and entrepreneurs and business. It's so important. Matthew Cook, $5 super chat. I acknowledge I'm on land that once belonged to the Duwamish who fought and took it from another tribe who fought and took it from another tribe. Yes. Old Sub Sailor, brave internet trolls. They would never say that stuff face to face. Cowards. Greg Anderson, politicians can't and therefore won't call a baseball bat a baseball bat and thus won't ever call a tax or a law that strips the rights of someone they do not like. Kelly Dowell Tarp, are you able to post the video of Bob Ferguson showing his true colors on Dark Money? It is critical to show Bob's true colors. Yes, we will post that after the show today. Let me see.
It is on Dave's Twitter.
Yeah, Dave pushed it out as well, I saw. Let me see here. Egamorph says, wish our governor had the amount of integrity and skills that DeSantis has in all of his pinkies. Yeah. Mama Pillow, in the interview I saw before the storm, he said his Social Security was cut off, talking about Lieutenant Dan. His Social Security was cut off because he was no longer disabled. This is happening to several people I know who are permanently disabled. You're not, how can you be no longer disabled if you're missing a leg?
I mean, I guess there are jobs you could do. Maybe they're saying you're no longer seeking medical help all the time and you technically there are some jobs you can do. I don't know.
Well, yeah, there would be a bunch of jobs you can do if absolutely. You're just missing a leg. I don't know if he has any other issues.
It depends
though.
On maybe what you were doing before, but
right.
I don't know.
Gotcha. Let me see. Austin Coleman, $10 super chat. That's sitting at cool the hospital one. Waiting for my first child to be born. Oh, that's awesome. Hopefully with the work you're doing, the world will have more common sense for him and the future generations to come.
Congratulations.
That's so sweet though. We hope awesome. So. We try. Congratulations. That's awesome. That's great.
Send us pics.
Send us pics. I mean pics are always welcome. Yeah.
Not of the process.
I thought you thought maybe of him. I'm like, Nicole, I think he's probably got someone, so we don't need any pics
of
you.
We're thinking about that.
All right. Good comments per the usual. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check. All right, a professor at the University of Kansas is in a little trouble, understandably so, because in the Midwest, they don't mess around, after being caught on the camera that was recording his lecture saying this.
It's what frustrates me. There are going to be some males in our society that will refuse to vote for a potential female president because they don't think females are smart enough to be president. We could line all those guys up and shoot them. They clearly don't understand the way the world works. Did I say that? Scratch that from the recording. I don't want the dean's hearing that I said that.
Yeah, the dean heard you said that. KU says the instructor offers his sincerest apologies and deeply regrets the situation. His intent was to emphasize his advocacy for women's rights and equality, and he recognizes he did a very poor job of doing so. The university said it has an established process for these situations, and the case is under investigation. Not exactly sure what needs to be investigated. That has been your Sanity Check for today. Reminder, please join us at one or both of the volunteer events. We need our Common Sense Army. If you've never volunteered for a campaign before, this is an easy thing you can do. You can stay for an hour, 2 hours, all 3 hours. We are going to be out in some critical swing areas, flooding neighborhoods, not with actual hurricane water, flooding them with our common sense and sanity. So we're going to be in Marysville from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. You can meet us at the Jennings Park there. And then on Saturday, we're going to be in Bothell, Meeting Point, Cedar Grove Park. And we're going to be door knocking, sign waving from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Dave is going to be there too. This isn't us going out there and schlepping it for Dave. Dave's going to be there. There's going to be some other elected officials there. And then if you're coming to join us in Marysville right afterward, Adam Fortney, the former sheriff up there, and his wife invite all the volunteers to join us for a rally at the Marysville Historical Society from 6 p.m. to 9 p.m. So I hope you guys can come out. If door knocking just does not sound like your jam, you can be on Team Nicole for the day. Let's see who wants to be on Team Brandy versus Team Nicole.
I might, yeah.
More people are going to want to sign wave.
I think
so. But that's okay.
So let's see.
Yeah, Nicole's like, that sounds great. What are we betting on? All right. So anyway, that has been our show for today. Thank you so much for being here. Is it Thursday? Holy smokes. We have a great Sundays with Subscribers. Mike Solon, the president of the Seattle Police Officers Guild, is going to join us. We're going to talk about those $50,000 lateral bonuses that were just approved and whether they're going to help at all with the Seattle Police Department staffing crisis. And also, what the hell does he make of this whole mess with Bruce Harrell, maybe endorsing a police abolitionist? Wild, wild stuff. So if you have not become a subscriber to our show already, it's just $5 a month. I meet people out and about all the time who they look at me with shame and say, I'm sorry, I just haven't got around to subscribing yet, but I love the show. And I'm like, how dare you? No, I mean, you know, we love you either way, freeloader or not. But if you'd like to support the show for $5 a month, you can do that at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com. Okay, bye. See you tomorrow at the volunteer event. Not on the show. We're not having a show tomorrow. So I'll just, you know, I'll just see you later.